Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Joining us now is Adam Goldman, a reporter for The Washington Post. Adam, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thanks for having me.
On all of these stories, the identity of the so-called Jihadi John, the pitch to young people around the UK and the world, how quickly is this moving, would you say, as a news story and as people react to it in the United Kingdom and in households in Brooklyn, New York?
It's clearly moving swiftly around the world, and we knew it would. You know, it's being reported now by almost every major media outlet, and it's, of course, a major story in the United States and London and even Japan because of what Jihadi John did to two Japanese hostages.
Is the naming of this fellow an intelligence coup, or does it simply give a name to something that's really not going to change that much?
I don't know if it'll change that much. You know, I was personally driven because while the U.S. and British intelligence agencies and probably the French, too, didn't want him disclosed, you know, it seemed like he didn't deserve anonymity. The FBI director, James B. Comey, said in September they knew who he was. Obviously, Jihadi John knows who he was. So I think it was in the public interest to learn who this individual was or is.
So what do we know? Is he someone who was recruited, who was turned in some way, or is his radicalization something that's been longstanding?
It seems like it was the radicalization was a slow burn. You know, he went on a supposed safari to Tanzania in 2009, but got stopped by the Tanzanian authorities. He was later interrogated by MI5, who asked him whether he wanted to go to Somalia, I guess with the purpose of joining al-Shabaab. He denied that. And then he comes back to the UK and he moves to Kuwait and he comes back again. He gets interrogated by the authorities in 2010 and he tries to go back to Kuwait, where he says he has a bride waiting, and essentially he's put on their version of the no-fly list. You know, we have his emails. He wrote that he had written to a friend, and he talks about being stuck in London. He felt like he was in a cage. London was his prison. So clearly there was desperation, and he wanted to get out of London. One thing that I found while reporting this is he was obsessed with al-Shabaab. And he made the hostages in Syria, the Western hostages, the U.S. and others, watch videos of al-Shabaab. So that leads me to believe that perhaps that trip to Tanzania in 2009 wasn't so innocent, because it's very easy to get Tanzania is right below south of Kenya. And then, of course, Somalia is within reach. It's right over the border from Kenya. So he could have been radicalized by as early as 2009.
What's your sense? Is this an individual with a lot of authority within ISIS, or is he something like, the Ryan Seacrest of terrorism?
No, I think that his stature, along with the other men dubbed the Beatles, has grown within the organization. And by last year, you know, his role had evolved, too, when they were holding the prisoners at Raqqa. You know, he wasn't feeding the prisoners. He wasn't some guard. You know, he was coming once a week, I was told, to visit the prisoners. He was making videos of them that they intended to send to the families. I think these guys had a greater role in the organization. They just weren't mere guards.
Do you think he's still communicating with people around the world under some kind of an alias?
I mean, hard to tell. I don't have any information that he is. And that email address I have for him, as well as his cell phone, no longer work.
Adam Goldman is a reporter for The Washington Post on the identity of Jihadi John as an individual by the name of Mohammed Emwazi from West London. Thanks so much, Adam.
Thanks for having me.